The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Boker Tov, how are you guys doing?
Yeah, how are you doing? How did it go with the vaccination yesterday?
Well, I mean, it was relatively uneventful in this respect that it's kind of like a flu vaccination. You know, it just kind of goes into the muscle in your arm. The arm's a little stiff today, but it's very much, from a physical point of view, very much like a flu vaccination. So no big deal, really. I mean, you know, there was a whole questioning session. Have you had a temperature recently? Have you recently had any other vaccinations? How do you feel? Well, what year were you born in? You know, all of these kind of checks and balances, even though they had the system in front of them that they could see all my details anyway. What was interesting for me is that the vaccination center was being guarded like a security establishment, a kind of a security guard on the door. If you didn't have an appointment to go inside, you had to remain outside. Nobody was allowed in who wasn't, who didn't have an appointment. Excuse me. And there were quite a number, the fact that I had my appointment quite near to the end of their working day meant that there were actually quite a lot of people hanging around outside. And these are people who had not managed to make appointments for one reason or another and were hoping that there might be vaccine over at the end of the working day, which would otherwise have to be thrown away. This has now become a thing that because the word has gone out that vaccines are being thrown away at the end of the day if they're not used because of the refrigeration issue, because I'm guessing that they're kept on site without the necessary refrigeration and there's only a limited period of time that they can actually be kept like that. So people gather at vaccination centers towards the end of the day, hoping that there will be leftover vaccine and that they will simply then be allowed to go in and be vaccinated in order to, because the staff at the center will understand that it's better to try to use it up rather than to have to throw it away. And there was quite a large crowd that had gathered outside, not socially distanced by any stretch of the imagination. And there was no real organization around it. In other words, people just milling around outside, waiting for the end of the day, hoping that they might get lucky. Then the end of the day finally came, and someone from inside comes out to say, if anybody here is over 60, please come forward. There weren't that many of those people. And then slowly but surely, they started to ask, are you 59 with chronic illnesses? Are you 58 with chronic illnesses? So then they were giving people the opportunity to come in if they were suffering from chronic illnesses and were, you know, a certain age close to 60. So that's how the evaluation was done. It seems as if that there was not much vaccine left over at this particular center at the end of the day, but there are stories circulating about how people have been getting together at the end of the day to try and use up the leftover vaccine. And also the latest stories, of course, now are that vaccination centers are pretty empty because they are not actually taking appointments anymore for people who need vaccine or for people who want to be vaccinated. The theory is that all of those who are over 60 and all of those who suffer from chronic illnesses should by now have been invited. And if not, I think there's going to be a slight break until new appointments are made once the new vaccinations have arrived and people feel secure that there is enough stock to go around. So there was one particular lady who really made me laugh because she stood up on a chair outside within this crowd. She was trying to isolate herself, and they were going down the ages, and she was getting very frustrated because they've got to 55 with chronic illnesses, and she was quite a short lady. She stood up on a chair, and she said, I want everybody to know that I am 53 years old, and I suffer from chronic illnesses. And people just kind of
That is so Israeli.
Yeah.
Like, that's just Jewish.
She was so desperate to get in, and she did actually manage to get herself in to be vaccinated, and everybody was pleased on her behalf that she, you know, because she was so desperate. But in fairness, there were people there, young people in their 20s and 30s who clearly had no prior issues, people who didn't even live in the city where I was being vaccinated. People come from Tel Aviv thinking that they might get lucky over there. So there is a little bit of chaos surrounding all of this, with some people really trying their best to be vaccinated, other people not caring so much. But it seems as if the whole vaccination process is going to go into some abeyance now while we replenish the stocks, while we wait for the Moderna stocks to arrive and apparently some more Pfizer stocks to arrive. We're at a situation now where we've vaccinated just under 1.5 million people. I think the latest number shows 1.3 to 1.4 million people. So around 15% of the population has received at least the first dose of the vaccine and will be up for being fully vaccinated within the next 3 to 4 weeks, I'm guessing. And then we'll see what happens. Apparently, you know, their expectation is that there will be further vaccine available during the month of February and that there will be another drive to try to get as many people vaccinated as possible.
Anthony, on another topic, firstly, thank you for that. And we'll definitely follow up with you. You know, we'll find out when you go for your second one. But I thought that Israel was still in a lockdown. And I see that there's a hard lockdown.
So Israel has been in a lockdown for the past few weeks, but this is kind of what I would call a semi-lockdown. And I mean, trying to work out why this lockdown has been different from all other lockdowns, because it really has been. There's been a different feeling about it. So during the last few weeks, shops on the high street and malls have been closed. Restaurants have been closed for takeaways. Restaurants have been closed for takeaways, but not for delivery. So you can order, but you can't take away. And schools have been open. And I think that the fact that the schools have been open has made all the difference to this particular lockdown. And that's why I think it's been differently perceived by so many people, because it doesn't really feel like we're in a lockdown situation, aside from the fact that many of the shops are closed. Only those that are considered to be essential have been allowed to continue to operate, but otherwise shops have been closed. And so as a result of this kind of semi-lockdown situation, people, I think, are taking it less seriously. And, for example, what went on over the weekend in Israel's parks was something to behold in a lockdown, because so many people got out and so many people were wandering around the parks. There's been very, very little enforcement of the lockdown. So no attempts to make sure that people stay home as they're supposed to stay home. No attempts to make sure that people are only going out for the purposes of essential activities or for exercise. Under the current rules, we are supposed to be within 1 kilometer of our home unless we have an essential activity to undertake. That's currently what the situation is, and it's really not been adhered to, as a result of which numbers have continued to rise. Once again, yesterday, more than 8,000 new cases of people infected with the virus were diagnosed, and that was already the second day in a row that the 8,000 number was breached. And the government, of course, unsurprisingly, looked around and said, we can't continue like this anymore. And now a hard lockdown has been declared starting on Thursday night. And the hard lockdown will involve closing the schools, first and foremost. Second of all, the hard lockdown will also involve closing essential shops, supermarkets, for example, at 7 o'clock. So there will be a curfew that will be imposed now, which we haven't had before. Now they will impose a curfew, and the curfew will also include supermarkets. I'm guessing that the emergency pharmacies will continue to operate even after the curfew, but there will now be this curfew. So this is an attempt by the government to somehow try to stem the increase in the number of new cases being diagnosed. I think the most critical difference for everything, of course, is the fact that schools are being closed, and that's the way that I interpret this new situation. There are, of course, quite a number of other new restrictions that have been imposed, but essentially I think they're going to simply close the schools and will also be enforcing it a little bit more stringently. So the government have said 2 weeks is the current state, the current period for the hard lockdown starting from Thursday night. My expectation is that 2 weeks will not be nearly enough. I think that after 2 weeks, we might finally see a slight plateau or a somewhat decrease in the numbers. It certainly won't reach less than 1,000 new cases per day, which is the government's target. So I'm expecting that 2 weeks would quite easily roll over into 3 or maybe even 4 weeks, and perhaps even longer than that.
Yeah, I think that by the time you get third lockdown, people realize that we have to do it. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. And
or alternatively, people
just
become
not get
just,
on top of
just
it.
I think people are just becoming tired, to be honest. I mean, the first lockdown, people took very, very seriously. You could feel that there was a different atmosphere. People didn't know as much back then. People were feeling very, very insecure, and so they were adhering to the rules more stringently. Now, I think there's an element of feeling like, because we know a little bit more and because we doubt a little bit more about what the intentions are and whether those actions are really the right actions, people are less inclined to be as stringent as they were before. People are feeling much more weary. Certainly from an economic point of view, people are suffering. But then having said that, we can see, for example, the tough lockdowns that countries in Europe are going into. The UK, for example, England has been put into a very hard lockdown as well. Other countries around Europe are also suffering what is for them, I think, their second wave. But they're also being put into a hard lockdown. I think the main difference between what's happening here and what's happening elsewhere is just this vaccination program, which potentially could change the paradigm for us. That's certainly the hope.
Anton Lopez, he's actually weighing in. He says, will there be enough second doses? Will there be enough second doses available with people waiting outside and some getting the leftovers? Good question. Thanks, Anton.
So, according to the official pronouncements that are coming from the government, there is enough second dose vaccine being kept in the refrigeration facilities to cover everybody who's been vaccinated. In other words, when they issue out doses in the morning to go out to the various vaccination centers, they set aside an equivalent number of doses into the second dose refrigeration so that there will be enough to go around. So in theory, there should be enough to go around for the second doses, but this is a point that has been doubted because there were some noises that we should give up on the second dose and just vaccinate everybody with the first dose rather than worry about the second dose. As I mentioned yesterday, the government has now come out saying very clearly that that will not be their policy and that their policy is to make sure that everybody gets vaccinated with two doses. I hadn't understood this, but apparently the Moderna vaccination also involves two doses. I've had it in my mind that this was only a single dose vaccination, but that's not the case. So even when the Moderna vaccination comes, I think that their period of time between the doses is 4 weeks rather than 3 weeks. But in all cases, they're only going to need to be two doses administered. And also the other thing about the second dose is that we are told that a second order of Pfizer vaccine has been placed and that the government is doing everything that they can to secure it. And there are some people who feel that the second supply of Pfizer might come in time to supplement the second doses for those people who need to be done.
All right. And a question from Rene saying, how do they determine new cases? Is it done strictly through testing?
I guess she's asking about your qualification, whether you're qualified, whether you have some sort of a pre-existing condition to qualify you to allow you to be vaccinated. And of course, when you turn up at the vaccination center, that is part of your medical health organization. So they have computers set up, they swipe your card, they have all of your medical history available right there and then. So the moment your card is swiped through the system, they can see who you are, they know how old you are, they know all of your pre-existing conditions, they can see if you're at high risk. And so they evaluate you on the spot like that.
Yeah. Colin has actually weighed in. He says, if I put the vaccine in beer and opened up the pubs, the whole country would be vaccinated by next Thursday. True story,
I've seen that one going around as a meme. So thanks for, yeah.
All right.
To be honest with you right now, I don't think we need to do that because people are really scrambling to try and be vaccinated as much as they can.
Yeah. Listen, certainly in Israel. Anthony, let's move on. And because we don't have a lot of time, a story that we have wanted to talk about every single day this week. Can we please talk about this? Israeli doctors performed eye socket surgery using augmented reality for the first time.
Yeah, we mentioned it very briefly and we've only got a minute left. I hope it won't be late for the news, but we're going to try anyway. So
I'll tell you what, let's do news. And can you stay with me after news? For a few minutes.
Socially distanced.
Like, socially distanced, yes, of course.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Anthony, did you hear that headline about Amnesty International calling on Israel to give Palestinians virus vaccine?
I did see a headline. I wasn't quite sure that Amnesty International was involved, but I did see a headline where Israel was called upon to give Palestinians vaccine. I mean, we should be clear that Arab Israelis are being vaccinated along with Jewish Israelis in all the same way. There have been stories circulating suggesting that the Arabs are taking up on the vaccination in lower numbers than other Israelis. And there was even a story that was circulating outside that vaccination center yesterday, which suggested that if we went to the nearby city of Kfar Saba, there might be more vaccine left over there at the end of the day, because some of the vaccine is brought from the nearby Arab villages, because a lot is left over and then gets brought to Kfar Saba. And so we might then have a much greater chance of being vaccinated without an appointment. So certainly Arabs are being vaccinated along with everybody else. In terms of the Palestinian Authority, there hasn't been much discussion about sharing vaccine with the Palestinian Authority or indeed with the authorities in Gaza, the Hamas authorities in Gaza. There was some discussion about the potential prisoner swap involving the bodies of our soldiers who remain within Gaza following Operation Protective Edge in exchange for vaccine. That was a thing that was circulating in the press, which doesn't seem to have come to fruition. But one should be absolutely clear in the understanding that behind the scenes and quietly, without any access to the headlines, there is a massive amount of cooperation going on between the Palestinian Authority, between the Gaza authorities, Hamas in Gaza, and between Israel, in order to try somehow to ensure that there isn't a massive outbreak of corona in those areas. There's been a lot of assistance provided, medical assistance and corona tests and things like that provided all over the place in order to ensure that, you know, things are kept under some level of control there.
Okay, so let's see what happens. And in Israel, I mean, the Palestinian Authority, and Palestinians are seen as what? I mean, this is one of the issues about them not having an independent state, is that it's not right. So clear cut in terms of, well, you know, they're their own country, they've got their own government, and they need to take care of these things themselves. It seems to still be, the responsibility seems to some degree fall to Israel.
I think it's pretty clear that they have their own authorities, that they have their own administration, that they have a government which is responsible for taking decisions about people who live within that area. It doesn't have the status as a fully fledged member of the United Nations, recognized as a nation in the world, the same as everybody else. But certainly, I think from an administrative point of view, the situation is pretty clear. It is true that they have a lot of reliance on other countries, including Israel, first and foremost, but also Jordan, and also other benefactor countries, including European countries that make sure that they have sufficient finances, Qatar, other Arab countries. So they have a lot of benefactors, a lot of countries that seem to rally around to take care of major issues, most importantly financial issues, but indeed other issues as well, food and medication and things like that. They have certain access to facilities, and there is no doubt that Israel is very much cooperating with them in order to make sure that they can get what they need.
Yeah. Thanks, Anthony. All right. Can we please talk about Israeli doctors using performing eye socket surgery using augmented reality? How does that even work?
Well, I think there are two aspects, and people may remember when we began talking about this the other day that caught my eye. The first of which is that a plate had to be developed, had to be made in order to fit into the patient's eye to reinforce the eye socket. And for that plate to be made, 3D printing was used. There was a 3D printer that printed out a titanium plate, which fitted exactly into the patient's eye socket. So in other words, some sort of an image was uploaded to this 3D printer to make sure that all the measurements were exactly right within the 3D printer. And then the titanium plate was printed out literally by the printer in order to fit into the eye socket. But the augmented reality part of this particular operation involved the doctors using a Microsoft HoloLens set of glasses, that they wore while performing the operation. The glasses were connected to computer software that contained models of the patient's skull and also the plate that had been printed out by the 3D printer. And when the doctors looked at the patient, they saw like a superimposition of that image from the computer so that they could see even without having necessarily to cut open the patient to see the inside, the skull, and the structure of what's happening within the patient's head. And within that eye socket area, they saw it superimposed through these HoloLens glasses so that they could perform the operation very, very precisely without necessarily having to intrude in order to see all that was going on under the skin. And apparently this made such a massive difference to the operation that it took almost no time at all. The operation apparently was performed within about an hour and a half, which seems a very, very short period of time for such intricate surgery. And more than that, that when the patient was examined after the operation, that things were so accurately in place, but the titanium plate and all the other work that had gone to reconstruct that eye socket, that everything was done so precisely that obviously it gives the patient a much better physical appearance, and second of all, a much better prospect of recovery. So I think all of these are very fascinating. Used for the first time in Israel, I'm not quite sure if these techniques are being used elsewhere. I'm guessing that 3D printing is becoming more and more common. Wherever you go, there's a whole massive industry of 3D printing for all kinds of industries. And of course, the medical industry is one of those major beneficiaries of this new 3D printing technology that we see. And it's becoming more and more sophisticated all the time. But this idea of using the augmented reality artificial intelligence in order to superimpose what the doctor can't see with the naked eye, I think is a fascinating way to go about things.
It really is. It really is. And once we got you on the line, Anthony, very quickly, about Israel's interest rate, the Bank of Israel, they've maintained the interest rate at 0.1%.
Yeah, I mean, Israel's interest rate has been below 1% for an extended period of time. I had to look back to February of 2014, when the interest rate was 1%, and then in March of 2014 was brought down to 0.75, and has gradually been brought down 0.25, and has been at 0.1%, I think, for something like most of the period over the last 5 years. So there was no huge surprise when the Bank of Israel decided that the interest rate will remain at 0.1%. What I think was a little surprising for some people is to have a look and see what the economic prospects were as analyzed by the Bank of Israel. Let's also bear in mind that the shekel to the dollar at the moment is 3.20 equals $1. Now, that's one of the strongest rates that the shekel has been at since I can remember. The last 10, 15, 20 years, I can't even remember when last the shekel was so strong, and continues to be strong and strengthening slowly but surely. You know, we're more accustomed to operating a shekel between 4 and 5 to the dollar, and now it's at 3.20, which is amazing. Obviously, 2020 showed an economic decline to the rate of about somewhere around 3 to 4%, which is a lot less than people had anticipated. There was a massive decline in the second quarter, the second and third quarters, but then there was somewhat of a recovery. We're expecting that the contraction will be around 3.7%. But what's more fascinating than all of this is that all of the economic models to try to map what the growth will be in the coming years are all centered around the vaccination program. They have one pace of vaccination, which involves a certain economic growth, and they have another pace of vaccination, which involves a different economic growth. So all of these models that have been put together to try to predict where our economy will be within the next year or two or three are all being predicated upon how quickly we can roll the vaccinations out.
So interesting, because when you look at how much of Israel's international trade is online, selling services like security and cyber security and all the different things that they do, a large part of it is online, and that actually might have had a much more positive impact on the economy.
There's no doubt that Israel's ability to innovate and to continue to operate even under the most extreme circumstances have been brought to bear within 2020, such that the contraction is expected only, in inverted commas, to be 3.7%, which is much, much less than some of the models have predicted during the course of the year. But the question now is how quickly do we get out of this and how quickly can we recover? There are some people who are expecting the economy to grow by 6 to 7% during 2021, hopefully with the unemployment rate reducing by something like the same level. So, you know, there are so many parameters right now in the mix, but they're all being driven apparently by the rate of vaccination.
Okay. That's where we're going to leave it today, Anthony Reich. Look forward to speaking to you tomorrow. And we finally did get to that story of the augmented reality.
Yeah, I mean, I have wanted to talk about it because, you know, we seem to kind of drown sometimes in corona stories and elections and politics and security issues. And there is a lot more to Israel than all of that. And from time to time, it's nice to try and bring it out.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful day. And thank you so much. Thanks for bringing your opinion and your insight. God bless. Bye-bye. That's Anthony Reich.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.